Good morning, Priya and Priya Srinivasan, and good morning, Gina. And welcome to our studio. This morning, we're hosting three lovely ladies who are going to present on Monday 28th at Adi Shakti Theatre, Churning Waters. And we have also the so-called artistic director, Priya Srinivasan, and another Priya, another Gina. Play, it's touching so many levels. It's so massive. How did you start that project? Because it's collaborative between Australia, India, Indian Australians, Australian Indians, and Aboriginal people, where Gina's come from.
Mm-hmm. The journey began because it was interesting as Indian migrants to Australia to consider the fact that we are living on stolen land, we're living on unceded land, something that we didn't learn easily when we were growing up in Australia. And as I grew older, I began to understand the struggle that Aboriginals in Australia were going through. Yes. And I felt that as migrants who come from India, which is a country that has also been colonized, it's very important to speak to people who are still continuing to be colonized. And how do we find our connections with one another as women, particularly using our forms, different and very varied forms, but primarily stories that connect us across thousands of years.
So you went back to the myths of each culture, no? And you find the similarities between them.
That's right. Similarities and differences too. Mm. But when we speak about our ancient mythological stories, we found that they also have similar stories. And we in India think that, you know, our cultures are old, 4,000 or 5,000 year old cultures, and then we encounter cultures that are 15,000, 40,000, 60,000 years old. And so then it makes us realize, well, maybe we're the young ones, you know, and how can we learn from each other?
Priya, you are from India or you are...
I'm from Chennai.
You're from Chennai.
Yeah,
okay.
And I am a classical dancer. Mm-hmm. So for me, this is a very new kind of a collab. I mean, it's a different kind of a collaboration because I realize that it's not just collaborating as artists, but it's also collaborating on a very human, deeply emotional level because all of us are a product of our times, of society, of our culture, what we have been taught to believe. So we meet somebody from who's very different, whose thought process, their background or their culture is so different. It's very interesting how, as a person, how as an artist, how I react, how I respond. So for me, it's not just an artistic experience, but it's also at a very human, emotional level. I understand not, you know, deep things which about myself and about things around me. So it's a very interesting process because, and it's also very humbling. And in India, we love to use the word, but I use it in all sincerity. Because we really realize that you're just a dot, and you know, there are so many different experiences around you, and that, you know, that helps you look at yourself in a totally different way.
Gina, you are coming from the indigenous culture of Australia, yeah?
That's right. I, along with two other ladies, have come here, and I would just like to say, when I woke up this morning, it's ironic that India is celebrating Republic Day, where back home in Australia, Aboriginal people are marching in protest
for
Australia Day. So we call
it what?
Survival Day, which is Australia Day. So Aboriginal people march
today
as Survival Day or a day of mourning. Because we are not yet a republic. So I found that ironic waking up here this morning.
I'm a little bit lost. You mean the Republic of Australia or you mean Aboriginal Republic? Now,
India is free from British rule.
Yeah.
Australia is not.
And neither are Indigenous people. Australia is not a republic, nor is it nor its Indigenous people have any freedom or their own sense of country and space and state.
Well, that's why you say stolen land. Stolen land. You can still do it, no?
Yes. Yes, that's the plan.
When did you arrive to Australia? When did you migrate?
I migrated when I was 8 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that Gina and I have been talking about is when I landed, in a way, when I went to school, I was mistaken for an Aboriginal because of the way that I looked at the time. And I took on that as a way of saying, the children would say, well, go back where you came from, you know, not really fully understanding what that was. And when I understood that Aboriginals were the original people of Australia, I took on that title and said, well, I am Aboriginal and you go back where you came from. So it was a way in which I began entwining my migrant Indian identity with an Aboriginal identity that I think stayed with me, even though the pressures of white mainstream assimilation were always there. This was an undercurrent that was running a thread through. But it took several decades for me to formulate and think through what such an engagement might look like.
Interesting. The Churning Waters is also about the women, right? That's another pretty strong, I mean, intertwining three really strong concepts.
Absolutely. It's not necessarily a play. It's a multimedia, multidisciplinary
performance
where we are looking at several themes about women's stories around water. And what does that mean on a much more deeper level as well? While we have concerns about pollution, while we have concerns about the planet, we also have concerns about women and women's bodies and those kinds of issues. So we're finding ways to interconnect our multiple ways of thinking around it through dance, through storytelling, through music, through visual elements, through ritual practices.
So the play is going to be, or performance is going to be really rich. What is the position of women in Aboriginal culture?
It's a strong position. It's one of nurturing and building the community. Due to colonization, our men have lost their standing where they used to be, I believe, and the struggle of getting back to what it was about to be an Aboriginal man, protecting his family. A lot of that was taken and beaten out of our men, and I believe that our women have been strong in rebuilding our men again, rebuilding our families, and placing not only our men but also our women at the head of our families again. And I believe that we're becoming stronger and stronger in doing that.
And in Australian culture, does the women have a kind of equal role or not yet?
Well, Western society thinks that women are emancipated and somehow the feminist movement has succeeded. But as we all know, that's not true. There is a huge rate of domestic violence, violence against women every day, whether you're, you know, any color in Australia, it doesn't matter. We are all in the world right now dealing with a huge epidemic of violence against women. So I think there is no emancipated state for women, in my perspective.
Priya?
I agree. Because we, you know, we look all around us, we see what is happening to women. I mean, you had the movement in which started in America, and then you have it here. But unfortunately, a lot of us, I mean, even among women, I think we're not, some of them are not, you know, when somebody raises a voice, we're not all united. So in India, especially in the South, there has been a lot of, what do you say, disdain, because the voices that were raised against these women, there was a lot of comments and very negative remarks, not only by men, but also by women, which is what is very sad and shocking. Mm. So, like Priya said, I mean, we are a long way to emancipation. But having said that, I think women are very strong emotionally.
Mm.
And especially in a country like India, spiritually also very, very strong. So I think that you can't keep them down, you know. The beginning, it's starting. So.
Do you have a feeling that actually the diminishing the role of the women in society started with colonization? Because I know that in the old Tamil culture, the women had a really powerful position. That started with colonization or before that?
I don't know enough about the old Tamil culture, but I know enough to say that yes, the women had a very dominant role. And I can say that even in dance, in Bharatanatyam, which the field that I'm familiar with, women, especially the women dancers, had a very strong status in society at one time. There were many reasons why the downslide happened.
Mm.
And I think colonization just speeded it up. It was, and also because the very fact that another culture, which is not familiar with what is happening, you know, in this culture, they look at it from a very different viewpoint, and so that kind of speeded up the downslide. That's what I think.
I would say also that Western sort of understandings of womanhood were very different to what the Europeans encountered when they came to India. So they presumed certain things about male-female relations, which may have not necessarily been true, that power was negotiated in very different ways by women in Indian culture compared to European culture at that time, or during the Victorian, you know, period, where it was differently understood. And we still face that Western definitions of feminism are not necessarily non-Western definitions of feminist thought, practice. And so it's hard to say, did colonialism really sort of... but I think Priya is right that it speeded it up. We also had our own problems. It's not like patriarchy didn't exist. But I think there were spaces for negotiation that became less, increasingly less, with multiple forms of not just colonization. We also have to deal with capitalism. You know, the formation of capital in relation to colonialism and patriarchy is why we are in the state we're in, you know?
Thank you. So it's time to go to back in metric, you know, to solve the problem. In our culture, probably 4,000 or 5,000 years back, it was matriarchy, right?
Yes. But I think the damage that's been done in the years since, I think Aboriginal people as a whole has a duty to repair one another, to heal and build one another, so that we can stand against. We have a bigger foe than just men and women. And so I think I feel that we have a duty to heal one another so that we can stand together strongly and go forward. There's a long road to travel yet.
Mm. Yeah, the bird can fly with two wings, not only with one. Yeah?
That's right.
The woman is a very strong link in this whole thing. Because just continuing what we were discussing earlier, it always amazes me when I see the economically challenged class of people sometimes. What happens is the women there are the breadwinners. And they are the ones who look after family. After the family. It's a very common story in most in Tamil Nadu that you hear and see. And they don't talk about feminism. They don't talk about, you know, women empowerment. They just assume the role. Mm. They know what needs to be done. They don't wait around asking anybody for power or the, you know, they just take the responsibility and run with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's because of the way the DNA of the way the woman is
the genetic emotion, blueprint of women. Yeah.
So I think I don't see much of a difference happening in the next, because I think women anyway do it.
What needs to be done, needs to be done. No?
But one thing I'd like to add is that we're also working with local organizations here, such as the Sowing Seeds Project, which is based in Pondicherry, which is helping the Koravu community of women who are in distress and in a way helping them build small businesses for themselves by giving them sewing machines and having them do recycling with old material, turning it into new. They're going to be at the event as well. We're including them in our conversations to see what we can do with our project to also be in conversation with them. There's also an orphanage associated with the Sowing Seeds Project, and we welcome people residing in Oroville and in Pondicherry to please come and support our project so that you can also reach out to the people in your own communities who are doing great work.
So you're putting the spotlights on many things, and it's not just a performance touching vital parts of our life, but also more. You are also reaching, at least that's how it's written, across the castes or social status of people, right?
Caste, class, we're really looking, and race, different kinds of issues on many terms. That's definitely true. We're all from different caste, class backgrounds. We are looking into what that looks like and our practices which are formed based on our caste in a way, and how do we rethink our relationship.
Since you, most of your life you were living in Australia, Indian expatriates in Australia, they still go by the caste?
Less, much less. Then it's not as prevalent or as present as it is here. But it's there's still a sort of an underlying sense of it, but I think it's much more lost and it's not as present in our lives as it might be here, because it is such a multicultural space. We encounter all kinds of Indians. We encounter all kinds of people from other parts of the planet, that caste ceases to have the importance that it does.
How did you assemble all these people? You started in Australia, then you came here.
It's a nice way of putting it.
What would be the other word?
This is a nice way.
Because you have quite a number of people participating on the stage and in the back.
Well, really it's through
Let's say, how did you encounters. Start? It? You must have started somewhere, right?
So the encounter was that there was a festival called Asia Topa, and it was an Asian festival of contemporary art in Australia. And under it, the Jaipur Literary Festival came to have a presentation in Melbourne. And so they asked some of us to do an opening for the Jaipur Literary Festival. And when they did, we said, well, we can't really do an Indian opening without an Indigenous component to it. We're on their land. And really, it makes sense for us to do it together. So that's when I met Gina's sister-in-law, Vicky, who is a leader in their community, and who said they were open to doing something called a acknowledgement to country, which essentially is a sort of a lines that are said to acknowledge the earth and to welcome the ancestors of Indigenous communities and ancestors from all communities to come together. And this is usually done by specific Indigenous people whose land is where they are located, and they will speak at every important occasion. So instead of speaking, we thought, what if we actually bring it together in an embodied way? What would that look like? So that began our journey, because we also have connections to the earth. We also have connections to our ancestors. So it immediately made sense to actually do a welcome together. How could we find our interconnections? And that's what began our journey. Vicky then brought on Gina and Vicky's daughter, Yaren. And then I was also working with other Indian dancers and Carnatic singers in Melbourne, all women coming together to do this. And that's what took, everything started taking off. And Priya and I had been in conversation about some other work at that time. And I thought it would be really interesting to see what would a an Indian artist of her caliber. I mean, she's very modest, but she's actually quite a superstar in Bharatanatyam in India and all over the world. What would it take for somebody like her to also be involved in this kind of conversation? So it's not a conversation between Australians, but we actually bring in, you know, a fantastic artist from India to converse with us, to say, where are the India-Australia connections? And as I did more research, it also emanated from that, with the idea that Indians had been in Australia 4,000 years ago. DNA evidence, archaeological evidence from the time of the king Rajaraja Chola time period, coins have been found. Language, the Tamil language, is present in some Aboriginal languages, 40 to 50 words. The idea of the dog that was brought from India to Australia, which now we call the dingo. And so there's so many connections that it felt small if we just looked at ourselves rather than also looking at the conditions in India. And that's how it began, and Priya agreed, and we actually started working together. And we did one project in 2017 and called Serpent Dreaming Women, which was to bring all these ideas together. Then it continued developing, and we went to the Northern Territory. We met with different Indigenous people in that space who are very different to Gina and Vicky, whose experience of colonialism is very different. Everybody looks different. And so we brought their conversation in conversation with Gina's, our conversation with, we have a Kutu artist who is from a disadvantaged community. She's the first of her generation as a young woman to emerge as a Kutha artist, which is and primarily...
First girl at all.
What is Kutha artist?
It's a folk art form. I don't know how else to describe it. Mm-hmm. It's...
from India?
Yeah, it's from Tamil
South India.
Oh. South India. And this Terukutha is from Tamil Nadu.
And she's the first woman to ever perform in any Kutha form, and she's emerged.
It's a man's field.
Exactly. Yeah. And so we wanted to engage with somebody like her to see what would it be like for her to engage with us, but also, you know, what are all the multiple connections we're finding when we cut across caste, class, gender questions, and how are we exploring this dynamic? And what was most of concern to all of us is the sort of destruction of the planet, which is also symbolic of the destruction of woman, you know, at its core. So that's really what brought us together. And churning waters is, yes, it's about the waters outside, but it's also about the waters that are inside us.
Well, coincidentally, we are facing a really severe drought in India, especially here.
And also India and Australia were connected through a concept of Gondwana land. So we have these ancient connections, and, you know, we're asking, what do these ancient connects translate to in the present moment and for futures? How do we find ways of connecting to one another? What do we have to learn from differently colonized people?
2017, you said you put on a stage
Serpent Dreaming Women.
Serpent Dreaming Women.
We were connecting around the concept of the serpent, which is very important to Hindu mythology and also to their mythologies. They have an equivalent serpent in all their cultures. And maybe Gina can speak a little bit about that.
The rainbow serpent.
The rainbow serpent.
The creator. Mm-hmm. So he created the landscape. So he's very similar to, what's your serpent called?
Adisesha and Vasuki. We have these serpents in our mythology. So we began by connecting to that. But it was never a theatre production on a stage. It was always a moving exhibit where people experienced things as they walked through and encountered and had various encounters.
Moving exhibition, which means that you also were dancing, you were screening the movies, the paintings.
Lots of different things. There was a visual screen. There was a soundscape that was created. There was also a talking that we were doing, dancing, singing, smoking ceremonies, combining. They have a smoking ceremony, which is to ward off evil spirits, which we have as well. So we found a way to connect around these kinds of rituals as well. Mm. So even at Adi Shakti, this is what the audience can expect. They're not going to be sitting inside the auditorium theater. It's a moving. They have to actually be walking, standing, sitting, traveling.
We're supposed to be traveling through the performance, or it's, how did you name it? I mean, how do you categorize it?
It is uncategorizable. It is beyond category. It is beyond discipline. It just is what it is.
We're the art installations which move.
Art installation which moves, okay. Yeah. And this art installation will start at 7 p.m. on Monday night.
That's right.
And how long it will take?
An hour. And then we will have a discussion and sharing, so that things that people have questions about, or because it is so unusual, I think we've often encountered people have a lot of questions. So we want to give people space to engage with us.
For that Dreaming the Serpent, what was the reaction of the audience?
It was great. It was really great.
That was in Australia, I believe.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. People were shocked in seeing two different groups of women telling their story in such a way that was so similar. And they could see our connection, I believe, because it's so seeable. You can see the connection between India and Australia. But I actually had work colleagues that came to it as well, and they were just blown away. They had never seen anything like it and loved it.
We had restricted it, the audience, to 90 people, and we had 350 people show up. So then we had to actually increase. We didn't want to turn communities away, so we ended up having about 250 or 260 people at the performance. So it clearly there's a lot of interest in engaging with the forms that we're trying to engage with in a different way. And also it makes people feel and think at the same time. So I think those elements also come together.
I think it's going to be really powerful. Are you going to limit the seats?
Well, we don't. That's why we're not exact. The performance is not inside the theatre.
It's going to be outside.
You're going to have to come and see. It's in multiple spaces is all I can say. Everybody will be moving.
So if somebody has an idea to come and steer the show to sit 1 hour or 1 hour and a half, you can forget about it, right?
That's right.
How did you choose Adi Shakti Theatre, or did Adi Shakti Theatre choose you?
Well, I've actually known Veenapani and Vinay from when I met them in Los Angeles in 1996. And I've always been very excited by their vision and what they're trying to do. Especially now more than ever, their vision matters to all of us, who they are, what the philosophy is, what they're trying to bring to the art world, to the everyday world, that I felt it was very important to engage with them. And I came last year to work some of my own other work that I do, just to engage with them and to discuss the possibilities of bringing a project like this. And then the Australian government supported us because they have a Festival of Australia in India happening right now.
In Chennai?
All over. And then they actually supported the project and said, you know, why don't you go ahead? And we then secured the partnership with Adi Shakti, who was excited to make this happen because we're hoping this creates more bridges and more back and forth between Pondicherry, Puducherry and Melbourne, for example. And also between Puducherry and Chennai, with artists like Priya coming here. She's been here before, but just how do we continue forming these bridges between what is happening here and in all these other places?
And then Adi Shakti is on Wayne City of Warragul, which has another dimension. That's the first time you are in Warragul, right?
No, I've been here before. We've both been here before. There is a deep sense of spirituality. We're aware of that history and that sort of the politics of that history and the politics of that spirituality. You know, when we arrive, we already feel a transformation and a shift. you know, from that city urban space to being here, already there's a, you know, change. Yeah,
physically you can see the change. But I'm more thinking about that you, so many cultures and actually so many women from so many cultures, because it's, you have the whole continent.
Mm. And all of them towards a way of life that is conducive to, I mean, very aware of the environment, responsible living, right? It's a big, I think it's so apt, it's so appropriate, you know, that the setting is exactly the way it should be.
Cool. Yeah, it's I think it is. Apart from Adi Shakti, you want to put this performance or art installation, movie art installation, somewhere else in India?
Yes, we are also presenting it in a village near Kanjivaram. Tilaka, the Kuta artist that we mentioned, is from that village. And so we want to take it back to the communities that we're working with. So we started in Melbourne, where Gina and Vicky's sort of lands around, they live around that land. We've then taken it to Darwin, to the Northern Territory. We have now, then we brought it back to Melbourne. Now we bring it here and we take it to Tilaka's village in near Kanjivaram. Then we also go to Chennai, to Dakshin Chitra, which is another sort of interesting space to engage with, similar and different to Adi Shakti. But again, not a theatre model, but an art space that, you know, is also thinking about the environment. Right? Sorry?
I think it's a gallery.
It's a gallery. Mm. It's a performance space. It's also reimagines itself very differently in conceptualizing its relationship between the folk, the classical, the contemporary, and the traditional. So that's why these locations are so important. And also we're going to Shillong. One of our collaborators who's not here, she's a visual artist. We're also taking the work to Shillong as the at the end of the trip.
Mm-hmm. How many of you are actually...
There are...
seen and the unseen.
Yes.
Seen and unseen. Okay, how many ladies will we see?
How many ladies
if we start
will we
with
see?
That.
We right now is 3 and 3, 6.
And Tilaka, 7.
7.
And then
2 men.
Loganathan.
You cannot forget them.
Yes, man. And Green Kumar. That's 9.
Abdul.
Sure. Who's a, so I think who will be seen
there
is 9.
Men on that in
yes.
installation.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Because we're also thinking that there are feminist men. So. And men who are sort of can't be left out of the feminist question. Mm-hmm. So how do we also engage with them in different ways? So 9 people will be seen, and there'll be a lot of people not seen who are behind the project in different ways.
So altogether, you are like 20, 30?
No, I would say maybe 15.
15?
Yeah.
And you were also mentioning a sound installation.
Sound installation that was there for Serpent Dreaming Women.
Mm-hmm.
And
for
we
this
will,
one?
There will be a sound installation for this one. We can't reveal the surprise of what it will look like. You have to come and experience it.
<You're> like
but you, it's a sound installation that will evoke stories
oh.
of different worlds that we all come from.
And these stories, I believe, since you're going beyond, it's not going to be spoken, right?
Some of it will be,
mm-hmm.
and some of it will not be. Some of it will be sung, some of it will be spoken, and some of it will be in silence and through movement.
In which languages? In Aboriginal language or in English or in Tamil?
All.
Hindi?
No.
No?
No Hindi so
Any
far.
Any other language?
For now, there are several Aboriginal languages that are emerging.
Sanskrit.
We have Sanskrit, we have Tamil and English, and that's it for now.
Yes.
Sylvia has a language. She comes from the Yolnu, and her language is very strong, so she brings that.
She's from the north of Australia.
Yes.
Yes, where I don't have language. So my language at the moment is English, but we're looking to relearn our language.
Through the generation, it was
through
forgotten.
Through the generations of colonization, it was stolen. We were prevented from speaking language. We were prevented from doing ceremony, a story, dance. And if you don't keep doing those things...
You forgot them, yeah.
They
oh, wait, you were not allowed to do the cultural stuff in your own land.
No, that's... what genocide is about.
Mm.
It's about wiping things and people from the planet. But we're still here.
Absolutely.
And we grow stronger.
How many different tribes are in Australia?
Oh, there is a map.
Talk about Victoria. In
Victoria, goodness, 38.
38 tribes.
38 tribal groups,
mm-hmm.
or clan groups in Victoria. But in Australia overall, there used to be 500 languages. But now maybe there's 100.
100? Left. They're still remembered, still practiced maybe somehow.
And probably even less actual practiced, fluently spoken in Australia. So, you know, there was a devastating impact of colonisation on Aboriginal people.
You take the language, you take actually...
Your identity.
Yes, of who you are. You speak Tamil, right, Priya?
I'm Tamil.
Yeah, you speak Tamil, yeah?
Yeah.
And you speak Tamil too? So you know exactly that in Tamil there are certain things you cannot express in English, and there's no way. And it has also its own physical frequency, which cannot be translated. And that's the original language is about.
Mm.
It is. It so much is. I was saying to someone the other day that I have a friend that she can understand her language, but Italian language in this case, but she can't speak it. But she can understand it when she hears it. And it's like, how does that happen? And it's all about that frequency, the way you hold your mouth, your tongue, you know, that's all the things, the mechanisms that make up language, and your breath, that she doesn't know how to do anymore. Because she was brought up speaking English. And so it's such an inside part of you in so many ways of really who you are. And if you don't have that, part of you is missing.
Mm.
Yeah, true.
You know, your identity is not whole.
While you were working on that performance, arts installation, the multiple thing, did you have any breakthroughs? Some kind of, like, say...
Mandara.
Huh?
Mandara. The language. Mm. Language was a breakthrough for us. One of my little great-nephews is called Mandara. And that, in Gudachmara language, is mountain. And we didn't realise, but they also have a Mandara. And it's a mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the language, and that's what we were finding, the stories and the language were quite similar through Aboriginal language and Indian, Tamil language. And it was like, how does that be and how did that come to be?
Mm.
And that's where we were discovering the connections that we have in the stories of the serpent as well. You know, there were similarities there and you just wonder where they come from.
Hmm. How does it feel to you guys? I mean, it has to be... I can imagine that at least if I would be undergoing something like that, it would evoke certain things, then it's also either reconnection or... How do you feel?
It makes me want to keep going and to find more, learn more.
And you, Priya?
Hmm.
Similar. I feel like
we scratch the surface.
We keep getting through layers, but it only reveals that there's a lot more, you know, to be got at, and that we're only really still at the surface, and we have a long way to go. But I think that's what we learn from Gina and the other Indigenous women in Aboriginal culture is deep time. Something that, in a way, we've lost in our own colonization process.
Mm.
The quickness that we want everything, you know, really fast.
Mm.
And we can't have it, you know. And it's not going to be quick. And to be okay with it being slow. That the answers or the insights come, but they come slowly and they come unexpectedly. And it isn't always pleasure. Pleasure isn't the thing for me. Anyway, you know, it is that...
It's been many tears along the road, hasn't there?
But it's a very interesting process of figuring out who you are in relation to the women around you and your own struggles and your own battles, and how do you actually negotiate that working together through different cultural approaches to struggle.
Interesting. And you?
Yeah, completely. I mean, she said it all.
Nothing to add. Are you planning also to expand?
No. We have enough work cut out for us with indigenous Indian cultures that for the moment, really, we are quite challenged by the enormity of this project and what its own life cycle, because there's a lot of work to be done.
You were working on it for quite some years, right?
I've always had this question with me for a long time, and I traveled to different places, and it was the energy of Australia that brought me back. And I felt that I shouldn't come back without a contribution in a different way. That, you know, it's a gift where I'm being given to be allowed to live in Melbourne. And maybe I've assumed that it's something that I am owed or something. I don't know what we think when we come to land. We think we're owed the land in a way. So my question has been, well, what do we need to do for the land and its people to contribute back, to say it's not free, we're not here for free, what are we here to do? So it's that change and that shift is what I've been interested in. And also, theoretically, you know, I've written articles and books around the question of subalternity and marginalization. But how do we understand that from differential positions of power? And how do we engage with it on a daily level without theory being the, you know, overarching force that comes and settles? But how do we find our ways from the ground up together in negotiation?
Priya, you went to Australia as well?
Yes, I went in 2017 for Southern Dreaming. And then in 2018, we started Chart Churning Waters.
Is there anything else we need to add to
I think we're good. This has been such a good experience
really.
Talking to you and so engaged. Really nice to be with somebody who's engaging with the work like this. Well, hope you'll come.
Of course I'll come. I'm just thinking that how I'm going to record this. So the audience can be also part of it, right?
They are a part of it. However they choose to be, I think.
So if somebody decides to really interact with the living installation, it's also
they can.
Did it ever happen to you?
Yes, we've had that before. Kids actually tend to do it more, but sometimes people do it.
Okay, that's another question. It's good that you mentioned the kids, because in Oroville the audience usually does bring kids with them. Is it appropriate for the children?
Absolutely,
it is. So they're welcome. Welcome to do them.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Thank
I'm looking
you.
Forward
Thank you.
To Monday. Really a different experience. Yet to me, it's going to be connecting on many levels.
Thank you. Pleasure talking.